Tom here, taking a moment to share something I am extremely excited about, my new book, Simply Paint Birds in Watercolour. Starting simple and slowly building step by step through 26 different paintings, this is a celebration of birds and watercolour packed full of useful information to get you having fun and feeling inspired. Set for release in July 2024, you can pre-order or purchase, depending on when you're listening to this, on searchpress.com as well as Amazon, and the book comes with a free danielsmith.com card of my chosen colours.
We are delighted that SearchPress is once again sponsoring Ask an Artist. SearchPress is the leading supplier of arts and crafts books in the UK. They publish beautiful and practical books that delight and instruct artists and crafters of all skill levels the world over. Now, some of our previous podcast guests have written books with SearchPress, including Hayley Jo Summers, Adebanji Alade, and even this chap called Tom Shepherd. So if you're looking for a dose of creative inspiration or want to learn from some of the very best professional artists and makers working today, then simply visit searchpress.com.
Hi, I'm Tom Shepherd.
And I'm Peter Keegan.
And welcome to Ask an Artist. This is the podcast designed for working artists and makers who are looking for tips and advice, ideas and strategies for not only making, but selling and promoting their work too.
Well, the podcast is called Ask an Artist for a reason, because every now and then we reach out to you, the listeners, for some of your excellent arty questions on the topic of the business and behind the scenes side of being a working artist and maker. So if you have a question you'd like to put to us, and I promise you there's no such thing as a silly question, all you have to do is send us your question via the podcast website at askanartistpodcast.com. Or you can reach out to us via Instagram and other social media, where we'll try and answer as many of them as we can. Starting off, we have our first question from Winter via our website. Winter has asked, I want to ask about how I can thrive in my art business if I plan on only selling prints and other products, such as bookmarks, mugs, blankets, etc., instead of my originals that I'd like to keep. Now, in the beginning, I'm relying heavily on the prints because product production costs a lot of money and I don't have enough followers yet to make it worth or profitable to spend said money. Interesting question, Tom. So we've got an artist here that's making clearly, you know, really interesting, engaging pieces, but is wanting to keep them and wanting to try to profit in other ways from them. Now, I haven't worked much in the print side of things. I know you've had a little bit more experience on making prints and selling examples of that. What's your take on this?
Yeah, it's such an interesting question. And for both of us, we come from a background of like teaching, supplementing our income at least a reasonable amount. And then I sell a lot of originals. The selling of my prints is fairly small. But that said, I have met and come across various artists over the years who the emphasis is definitely on selling prints and selling product. They might be selling the original as well, but maybe at a very high price. So the original sales are few and far between. So the emphasis is definitely on there. So I think it's doable, but there's so many different ways that you can approach it. As Winter's saying, you know, do you print your own stuff? Do you just focus on prints to build up some money? Like, and then you can start to look at the more expensive aspect of actually producing products and going into production, which is definitely kind of a leap up. So yeah, there's a lot wrapped up in that. What are your thoughts on it initially?
When I think of an artist that's producing work like this that they want to keep, I kind of look at the sort of different price points. And I think, you know, what you just said is right. The original work of art, whether it be, you know, sculpture or painting or whatever, you know, that's the kind of the top end. That is the highest point. And then there's sort of smaller versions of it, whether it be, you know, printed on a mug or a mouse mat, all the way up to kind of prints and so on. So having those different price points is important. It makes your work more affordable. It makes it reach out to other people. And you're creating kind of different products. However, I think that sometimes by suffocating the potential of those wishing to purchase that kind of top tier, if you're kind of taking that away, sometimes I think it may in some cases devalue the others, the kind of the lower, smaller items, because that larger one, that bigger one, is not achievable. There's a few artists I know what they do that are in the exactly same similar situation. They may spend, you know, months, if not years, on one piece. And of course, then to sell that at an astronomical price is very unrealistic. So they work majority on the selling of prints and so on. But what they do is they look at the different variety of prints and copies they can make from the original. So we all know there's this cliche prints, which is sort of a high-end photograph on high-quality paper that you may put in a mount and so on. So that's the obvious one. But then there are some artists that are very clever and they do their prints in different capacities. So they will do a print, for example, on a stretched canvas that's sort of wrapped around the frame. So suddenly it instantly looks more original, if you like, because it's something that you would hang on a wall that isn't under, say, glass or that's on paper. And then some artists go that little bit further where they wish to add a little bit of originality to these prints without the time-consuming nature of starting a picture from scratch. So they will produce a series of prints on canvas, let's just say a dozen, and they're all the same. And what the artist will do is then hand embellish each one of these kind of prints on a canvas. So then everyone is a sort of it's a little bit more original because the artist's hand has been on. And they all might be slightly different. The artist might embellish it in different ways. They might draw an aspect to one area in the picture a little bit more. They may add little elements of gilding or highlights. I know some artists, they sort of add a sort of a paste, which is like a thick gel. And to enhance the texture of brush strokes. Now, there are no brush strokes because, of course, this is just printed ink on a canvas. But when they kind of brush this gel on, sometimes with a little bit of additional colour, the end effect looks incredibly realistic in that it looks like it's original painting. Now, as a result, you're creating something that is a little bit more you, a bit more personal. It's had your hand touch. You can hand sign them as well. But, of course, it is still very much a print. Now, of course, the important thing to say here is that if, as and when you sell this, you must clearly state that it is an embellished print. So you have to, you can't, you know, pull the wool over the customer's eyes that, yeah, this is an original. I spend all this time on it. I think if you can sort of open out that top end, as opposed to very focusing on the sort of smaller end of bookmarks and mugs, I think that's going to really open your potential of earning more income. And also, really celebrating the artwork that you've spent such a long time on, especially if it's very detailed and so on. I think it needs to be, you know, showcased. And if there is a customer base for it, that opportunity to, if not purchase the absolute original, the closest possible thing that has your hand on it as a painter.
Yeah, definitely. I love that idea, Pete, because you're, as you said then, you've got these two kind of massive extremities from highly expensive original, Low Winter's not even talking about selling that, and then kind of bottom end, to call it that. And what you're talking about here is sort of bridging that gap and creating different price points. And also, we know that so often with artists, people, okay, they like the image, yes, but they also like the artist and they want to know that the artist has had a little bit of a hand on it. Absolutely. And that's a really nice way to tick that box. To continue, I think another big consideration when you're dealing with prints of anything, including greetings cards, is being realistic about the volume of that product that you need to sell in order to, as Winter says, thrive as an artist. There's a difference between just selling a little bit in the background, which is what I do, versus having these prints as your, basically your sole income by the sound of it, pretty much. So like, how much volume of print do you need to sell? And how are you going to do that? Are you going to sell it for other avenues or just your own? Because I've met many artists who stop being an artist and they end up becoming a print distributor, yeah, and they end up running around the country or constantly going to the post office to deliver to all of these different outlets. And they spend a lot of time kind of chasing that and they stop becoming an artist. It just happens to be that they're distributing their own prints, but they might as well be running a full-time business distributing that. So that's kind of volume. And then I guess the other off the back of that is, are you doing things like print on demand, or are you getting loads of stuff printed up front, and then you've got like not only housing stock but potentially ending up with lots of extra stock that may or may not never sell. And I've made that mistake, and I know many other artists have made it. So there's quite a lot of little decisions to be made here.
Yeah, I fell into that same trap before by making greetings cards, where I massively overordered on so many greetings cards that I printed years ago, and I still have them in drawers kind of cluttering up. So, you know, I'm slowly getting rid of them, but I massively regret ordering so many. What I should have done is a smaller order.
I sold a load of leftovers as just a job lot on eBay for a fraction of what I ordered them from, just because I literally didn't have the space for them anymore. Yeah. So I think probably every artist that's ever done greetings cards or prints can relate to that story, definitely.
It is a tricky balance, isn't it? Because, you know, if you give all the production cost to someone else who's going to print on demand, the profit you're going to get is so small, it's not really going to make much difference to your bank balance at all. So, you know, I think one of the benefits of printing it yourself and storing it is that if you do it in small batches, you can very much advertise that this is a limited amount. You know, once it's gone, it's gone. So there is, you're building up a little bit of excitement that, oh, well, I have to buy it now, because if I don't buy it now within this period of time, it's going to run out. Whereas if it's always available there, yes, you will have that evergreen content of people potentially buying, but that excitement and that time frame isn't there, and people will be more likely to be more passive and going, well, I'll buy that later, and then they never get around to buying it. So if you maybe have a smaller batch, instead of buying things in the hundreds, buying things in, you know, 20s, 30s, 50s or so on, that is realistic that you can store, of course, depending on your storage capability, you can advertise that, you know, I'm having this print run, or I've got this number of stock, but only while stocks last, and is not going to last that long. So you're going to build up a little bit more momentum and success, hopefully. And then, of course, if it does sell out, you've got two options. You can either go, well, due to the overwhelming success of that sellout, I'm going to release a few more, which looks very good on you from a marketing perspective. And if you do sell out, and you think, actually, I quite like that, and I'm going to leave that as a sold out, then that frees you up, hopefully, with a little bit more capital to invest in buying more stock of a new product that you're going to release. It is difficult finding that little sweet spot, but I think that might be another strategy worth considering.
Yeah, it's a really tricky one, isn't it? And I know there's many artists that also, to kind of drift it into the first part of the question again, like moving away from prints, she's also talking about wanting to come to other products, other items like bookmarks, mugs, blankets, clothing. You know, I know full well there are many artists that make a really good living from just selling this stuff. But again, you're kind of left with this thing of like, do I produce the product at my own cost? Where am I going to store it? How am I going to sell it? Particularly if I don't have a huge amount of followers. So there's a lot of different questions to work out. And one option, so we're always talking about having these different table legs in a business, aren't we? And slightly what Winter's talking about here is she's kind of putting a few of her eggs in the same basket. And we're trying to look at how you can potentially expand that a little bit, and also take some of the pressure off yourself, both financially and time-wise, because you want to remain as an artist. One of the other options, and I don't have direct experience of this, but I know artists that do well with it, is licensing your image. So you've produced an original image. You then effectively have the copyright to this image. So whilst you may not want to sell the copyright of the image to anyone else, you retain that. You may well sell them a license to use your image for a limited amount of time or for a limited amount of products. Greetings cards companies being the obvious one. Like you've produced a painting, you license it to another company. They do all the hard work of the selling and you receive a royalty. So most likely with one or two images, this isn't going to like boost your bank balance massively as a thriving artist. But if you've got enough images and you focus enough time on building up a licensing portfolio, it's definitely a significant extra leg to your business that might be worth considering when you have all of these lovely images, but maybe you don't have the following and you also don't have the capital to invest in products. So it's definitely worth looking into as well.
That's really good. I hadn't thought of that. I mean, I suppose as well, that's going to really, I suppose, depend on the type of work you produce as well, because I can imagine some very specific, you know, very niche sort of outlets. If your work sits in a particular genre or particular style, that would lean really quite well into that, especially if you could duplicate, if you have a decent back archive and catalogue yourself, that could work really quite well. But of course, that very much depends upon, I suppose, how protective you wish to be on your imagery. Would license it increase the, I suppose, the value of the original, or would it take it away? I suppose it would increase.
Yeah, it's such an interesting question, isn't it? Because we've spoken about this, like with again going back to when we spoke about cryptocurrencies and NFTs specifically. Like when you start reproducing an image in any form, either digitally or on products physically, like how does that affect the value of the original? And it's a really interesting topic that doesn't seem to be any particular conclusion on. I guess in Winter's case, because she's not actually selling the original, does that matter so much? But then you come round to like, well, if I wanted to buy a print of something, but it's also printed on all of these other products, does that devalue the actual print as well? So, you know, there's so many different considerations here. But hopefully that gives a little bit of a different angle on it and poses some more questions. So next question is via the website from Anonymous. It's a short but really good question. A, is it possible to monetize artwork as a teenager? And then, is it important to show my face on social media?
Two very good questions, two really interesting points. Let's go with the first one. Is it possible to monetize artwork as a teenager? Let's try and rephrase that a little bit. Let's rephrase that word teenager to emerging artist, because, you know, that's when artists are finding themselves, irrespective of age. I think we can all relate to being a teenager or sort of learning and starting out. So is it possible to monetize? I think it absolutely is. I can reflect back when I was an emerging artist, a teenager, and I was picking up work kind of straight away. Now, I didn't have the luxury of a social media following or a website. I went to that very, very old-fashioned way where I would photograph with a camera, photograph my paintings. I would go down to Boots, the chemist, and they would print out photographs, and I would stick it in a photo album, a small little photo album that would sort of almost fit in my little bag. And whenever the inevitable conversation came up, whether it be friends or family or within school, about I'm very much into my art, my parents or friends would say, oh, show the pictures, and I'd take out the pictures, and straight away people would go, oh, I really like that, that would match the curtains in my living room, or oh, would you paint my dog or my friends and family. So straight away I was able to kind of pick up work in that sense straight away. Now, of course, I wasn't making mega bucks. Sometimes it was just paying the cost of the materials or, you know, £50. But even £50 for me as a teenager was still a lot of money. So I think that, yes, you may make a little bit of income. It certainly gave me a massive amount of motivation. It was a real kind of exciting drive that somebody wanted to pay me actual money for something that I worked on, which I found really motivating to continue producing work. But of course, it wasn't going to certainly pay me handsomely that I could buy my sports car when I was passing my first driving lesson. What's your point of view of that from monetizing work early on?
Yeah, I love that story, Pete. Just a little bit of an insight into where you started as an artist, and I love it. And it's interesting because it sounds like you were more kind of initially, even, yeah, like I like replacing it with emerging artist, you were kind of immediately focusing more on original paintings. I came at things from a different angle, and this might apply to a teenager slash emerging artist, where I was just taking on any old thing because I didn't have a huge amount of clarity about exactly what my artwork was and what I wanted to do with it. I was like taking on little jobs of doing logos for local guitar shops or, and this is, you know, even in my teens before I became a full-time artist, I was still doing these interesting little jobs. I wasn't really selling things. So it kind of, my point being, it depends what artwork also that you're talking about. If you're wanting to talk about selling final paintings and that's what you're doing, then Pete's approach there and kind of attitude is absolutely the right one. And then instead of, or more likely alongside that, are you keen to just really get stuck into your art and kind of make a bit of cash here and there just from being an artist any old how while you find clarity and you find your way, which is what I did. I would literally paint anything, do anything, say yes, work out how afterwards, because in my own words, I wanted to live by the brush, which was basically make at least a little bit of income from being an artist in whatever form.
You've said that phrase, it's just saying yes. Say yes, just say yes to opportunities. And I did all sorts of weird and wonderful things. I remember painting a logo on the side of a narrow boat on a canal.
Yeah,
just because exactly. I could use a paintbrush. They said, well, could you paint us some flowers and a picture? And I was like, yeah, I can do that. Why not? And a local primary school said, would someone come in and paint the wall on the side of a building of a mural? I was like, yeah, I could do that. Why not? Having no experience in that. But I thought, well, you know, you'll only learn if you say yes and give it a go. And they were understanding that, you know, they're not approaching a professional artist. They are approaching someone emerging. And it was fine. And I think when you say yes to these opportunities, only then will you know, actually, I really like this. I'm going to develop it further. Or you'll go, well, that was lovely, but I'm not going to do that again. It was a good experience. I'm going to, you know, go in a slightly different direction.
Totally. I think like any profession, I almost saw those early days as me learning my trade.
Yeah.
And I didn't know exactly what I wanted my trade to be, but I knew the rough ballpark. And it was fun as well. Like, I loved the challenge of having to do all these little random tasks and jobs that were art orientated. And it really sharpened my skills, really got me to know different mediums. And that was it, really. That's where I started and how I would definitely recommend.
Yeah. No, I think this links into the second part of the question, that I think if you solely try to sell your artwork through social media and that is the only channel, then I think you can expect to be rather disappointed, because I don't think you're going to get inundated with people saying, yes, I'll buy that and I'll commission that, if the only way is to go through social media. So this takes us to the second part of the question. Is it important to show my face on social media? Now, I think this is going to really split the room on those think you absolutely should, because we should allow the audience to see who is behind the artwork, that there is a person behind it. And to those, I think, actually, no, it's got nothing to do with the person. The artwork should very much speak for itself. I do flit from time to time on my opinions on that, but most of the time I then fall back onto the main answer, which is, I think, yes, it is important to show who you are as the artist. Now, that doesn't mean to say you need to be on there all the time. You shouldn't be face forwarding in every single post or video. But I think it is important just for people to be aware of that they are dealing with a human, that there is a person behind this artwork. If you are really keen to dip your toes into the art world, one of the biggest, best commodities is you, yourself, the artist. People want that ability to know that they are dealing with an artist and not just something invisible behind the scenes. So I think on the whole, it is slightly better, but it's within sort of a reasonable moderation. You don't always have to kind of put yourself all the time, you know, pop up occasionally with the odd photograph of yourself. It doesn't need to be any more than that from my perspective. What says you on that?
Yeah, I pretty much totally agree, Pete, to put it simply. I think that particularly in this day and age, and if you are going with social media a lot, then it can't be faceless. You know, when I look at other artists' pages and it's just full of work, obviously that's the main thing and that should be at the heart of things. And it almost bugs me a little bit that it's not. But in reality, we need a little bit of personality, a little bit of face in there, definitely. I think kind of following on from you, and echoing the same thing, there's different ways you can do that. You don't have to be someone that is talking to the camera, because that may not be your thing. It may just be as simple as a little video of a shot taken from the other side of the room of you painting and your face appearing here and there, or you working appearing here and there. Anything to give it a little bit more personality. Mm. It doesn't have to be literally front facing you talking to the camera every single day. Different ways to do it, but I think it is important in some form.
Well, I think that's a good moment to take a short pause for a quick break.
One of my go-to brushes from Rosemary & Co. is the Sienna range, which is made to emulate natural squirrel hair and is simply wonderful at any size. My brushes of choice for watercolours are the mops. With a lovely large body that holds buckets of water, they come to a soft yet fine point for the perfect amount of control and flow. It has the soft and playful characteristics of squirrel hair, which are a joy to work with, combined with the refinement needed for more delicate work. At larger sizes, I love them for huge coverage with big sweeping marks and washes, then scaling down in size for more control, but without sacrificing that glide and that looseness. Siennas even come in pointed rounds for more control, plus sword liners and pointed ovals for further variety. If you want to loosen up your watercolour, get the paint flowing, yet retain some control, these are definitely the brushes for you. Check out the full range of these lovingly handmade brushes at rosemaryandco.com, where you can also order a free catalogue, which is delivered worldwide.
Welcome back to Ask an Artist with me, Peter Keegan.
And me, Tom Shepherd, where we are taking some of you, the listeners' questions. We have a fantastic one here, which is definitely going to split the room even more than the last one, I think. Great question. I'm an artist that has started using a little bit of AI to change and suggest new compositions and designs to work from. I've mentioned this to a couple of artist friends who were shocked to hear I'm doing this. To my mind, it's no different from working from a photograph or editing a finished painting with Photoshop to make it look better on your website or social media. What are your thoughts on the use of AI in an artist's work? I'm going to throw you under the bus and go straight to you there, Pete.
God, well, how long have you got? I mean, this is fascinating. I have had a few conversations already with artists out there who we are starting to see this really interesting trend, how artworks are starting to appear that we're seeing through social media and online, because that's the way that a lot of us are seeing new artwork produced by artists. And there's a little bit of skepticism of going, did they really produce that? And suddenly a new work of art comes out. You think, wow, this is totally innovative. And you see who the artist is. You think, wow, that's not in their usual style or approach. It looks completely different. And then I thought nothing of it at first. I thought, oh, that's really fantastic. This art has taken a new direction. And then someone planted a seed in my head and said, do you think they're using AI? I said, what do you mean? So, well, are they just typing in the search engine some keywords and AI is throwing up lots of low potentials and that they are basically using that as their reference point? And I just thought, no, apps, they can't be doing that. That's not allowed. And then I sort of stopped myself and I looked more at some other artists' work and I was like, oh my gosh, I think I was starting to maybe see patterns in use of layouts or composition, maybe use of colour. And I thought, there's a potential where I'm starting to see this infiltrate. Now, then I had to ask myself, how do I feel about that? Is that okay? Is that wrong? How would I do it? Would I do it? Is it any different from me looking at a photograph and using a photograph as a reference point? So as a portrait artist, I would sometimes photograph my model and work from that. So it's my image, but of course I am using a piece of technology to aid my creative process. Is it any different from me going through a gallery museum and being inspired by some of the artists of the past and going, well, I'm going to paint a picture in the style of, you know, Rembrandt or Sargent or whatever. I mean, that's a form of me taking inspiration from. Is an artist that using AI, which bear in mind, AI is basically doing the same thing. It's taking visual imagery from the past and all kind of content out there and posing out some suggestions. Is it any different? And I suppose my conclusion was, it feels a little bit wrong that there's this computer that's involved in the creative process. For me, that was the bit that I felt a little bit, oh, I don't know if that is completely right, where the imagination, where we could have coming up with creative original ideas. Original ideas, yes, that are inspired by other original ideas, but to have some ideas that have been completely generated with artificial intelligence suddenly makes me feel a little bit uneasier. And I think that there's less authenticity from that artist. And but I don't know, I keep changing my mind on it because I can see the potential and the excitement of it, but I still have that kind of slight uneasy feeling with it. So that's how I feel about it. I think there's, I've still got to look into this a lot more, but I mean, have you experienced this, and are you noticing any kind of visual trends out there where suspicion of AI getting involved?
I haven't looked that closely. We've obviously got like people producing AI artwork. That's one thing. I feel that we're talking about here is someone who is maybe a traditional artist, but they're using AI to come up with their compositions and their designs. And then maybe to some degree, and I don't know what degree, then copying that into an original. So I think when I'm listening to you talk there, the biggest thing that I take away from that is who's making the decision. So like when I am teaching other people, I always say to people like, creativity in painting is actually a lot of decision making about what to put in, what to take out. Even if you copying a photo, whether it's yours or someone else's, you as the artist are still making decisions. You have to make decisions. As soon as you start using AI, you are having something else make a lot of, if not all of this, the decisions for you. So that is, and I'm not saying that's necessarily a worse or better thing. It's just that's for me is where it is. Are you making the decisions as an artist and putting your own spin on it? Or is AI doing it? Or is it kind of somewhere in between where they're giving you ideas, but you're taking that idea and running with it? So this makes, for me, why it becomes such a grey area and a topic that we could talk on for a whole nother hour, maybe do a whole nother episode on it. I would sum up by saying, actually, ultimately, it falls upon the morality of the individual artist at question. Like, how comfortable are you using AI if you really are very honest with yourself? And how honest are you being with the people that you're showing your final artwork saying, well, 60% of this was done by AI. The remaining 40% of the decisions were mine. Actually, AI came up with this and I just translated it into a painting with very little change. Like, complete transparency and what you feel comfortable with for me is kind of the bottom line.
Yeah. When I see and think of this this situation and problem, I put two different hats on. And the first is the hat of the point of view of the artist, you know, how would I use it? And what do I agree with other artists using it? But then if I go the other side and put my hat on as a customer, a consumer of art, which can go in different ways, I think that one of the wonderful things that AI is probably going to bring is, you know, kind of what I call decorative art, art that's just going to sort of fit in, you know, IKEA and other print-based things that are just going to match the curtains and the cushions of a home, and it's just going to sort of be domestic art. AI is probably going to be very, very good for that, and it's going to produce exactly the type of thing that a customer, they don't care who the artist wants is, they just want something that's going to decorate the wall and make it look arty when actually there's not a lot of art. I think, you know, that's going to work to a point, but I think there'll always be a customer base that's always going to want to have an artist, have that person that's behind it. And that's what a lot of people, I think, really look for when they're working with creatives. They want the craftsmanship, the artisan, someone who's skilled with the material and how they interpret that material into their genre. You know, that is as much the art as the finished, you know, work of art that's on the wall or on the plinth or on the mantelpiece. And I think that if you're an artist that uses AI, and if you're very, whether you're open about it or not, I think you're slightly devaluing yourself as an artist by sort of, you know, diluting yourself. You know, some, there are a lot of people out there that actually want you and your creative decisions, not what a robot is coming up with. And I would sort of look at that as well. If I saw a work of art and it said, to use your, you know, example, 60% AI and then 40% artist, even if I liked the picture visually, I think I would be sort of somewhat 60% disappointed that that wasn't created by human and artist, that it needed AI to do it. And I'd feel slightly more colder with it when I look at it.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, Pete. And what's interesting, though, because art and our love of art is so subjective, you may get someone else comes along and says, you know what, I love the fact that 60% have done with AI.
Exactly.
And that's, for me, is why it always comes back to, it's a tool. How much of it do you want to dominate your work as the artist? And then morally, are you being transparent about that? I would also then, just for me personally, I like the fact I get quite geeky about all the kind of other stuff of art, like composition and working out compositions. And I enjoy all of that stage of it. And it's all, for me, part of honing the craft, learning our materials, all of that sort of thing. Yet I can see how AI used in the right sort of way for each individual artist can bring something to it. So like you, I definitely swing between the two. But again, my bottom line is like just transparency and being honest with yourself and other people about how you're using AI.
I agree with you that that transparency is important. And there was another bit that, you know, inevitably when these great tools and gadgets and things come up, inevitably, I think as artists across the centuries ask ourselves, ooh, can this help me? You know, will this make my life easier as a painter? Will it speed things up? And will it make my artwork better? And I thought, ooh, well, maybe I should use it as AI as that point of inspiration. And I stopped myself going, do you know what? I'm scared to do it, because if I do, and suddenly I'm looking at all these really wonderful, exciting, compelling images, I think part of me would probably be a bit disheartened going, oh, I couldn't come up with that. I needed a machine to do that. And then I thought, if I've opened Pandora's box on this, is there a danger of me kind of polluting and destroying, you know, where I am more authentically as an artist, where it's 100% me and what I'm doing, as opposed to being, you know, tempted by the exciting visual representation of AI. So I'm keeping the box closed and well away at the minute. I'm not even tempted to look in, because I would worry kind of what influence it may have, just in case it does excite me. I'm sure it wouldn't, but maybe it would. I don't know.
But it's such an interesting point, though, because there is a danger that we may lose, and I'm just speaking from an individual point, as you are, like we may lose our sense of what we're creating that's born out of us.
Exactly, yeah.
When it'd be like collaborating with another artist. Great here and there, but when you start collaborating with another artist, maybe their voice starts appearing in your head and you start comparing yourself or having doubts and all of these other things. So, yeah, that's a really interesting point. I think we need to talk about this a lot more, don't we, Pete, at another point.
I think this is a really interesting topic. I'd love to speak to someone who's maybe using AI, or maybe somebody who's, you know, a bit more aware of how AI is utilized in the art world, because I'm sure, I would guess, there's a lot more of it out there than perhaps we really realize.
And also, I'm as we are, traditional artists, inverted commas, like, I have a slight bias with my opinion and my views upon it. So I think it would be definitely interesting to get other people's take on it as well.
Keep listening for hopefully a future episode on that. But for now, thank you everyone for listening. Remember, if you'd like to put a question to me and Tom, you can do so via the website at askanartistpodcast.com, where you can also find all our other previous episodes, our interview episodes, and of course, all the other question ones as well. And remember, the show notes are on there as well. Thank you for listening. Keep subscribing and we'll see you next time.
Jackson's Art is so much more than just art supplies. They also host the most amazing blog. I've spent so many hours perusing the beautifully shot images and video alongside expertly written and composed articles. With so much thought and care going into each one, the blog is a work of art in itself. Maybe you're looking for technical advice on specific materials, processes and equipment, from painting and drawing, through to lino cut printing, and much more. Or you'd like to learn much more about the practical properties or even the historical context of the materials you're using. Visit jacksonsart.com/blog to find out for yourself.